Hey friends, welcome to this month's edition of All About Multisite, which again is brought to us by Portable Church Industry. These guys really are all about multisite. You'll hear actually multiple times during today's interviews, multiple shout outs to Portable Church Industries because they're kind of this sublayer that is interacting with and helping so many multi-site churches do this well. They help churches like yours go portable into schools, movie theaters, all kinds of other locations. You should be talking to them if you're thinking about going multi-site or if you're thinking about launching your next campus. What you need to do is go over to portablechurch.com/unseminary, and not only will you find a micro course there called 7 Lessons from Multisite Churches, you can see that and download that. It's exclusive for people listening to the podcast, but there's also a link to talk to Jeff Beecham. He is their multi-site specialist, and he would love to help you. We answer all kinds of questions, but we can only get to 3 every month. Where Jeff, you can literally find his calendar at that link, go over there, click on it, and you can get into his calendar and get your questions answered. You should do that today. Well, let's tune in to this month's edition of All About Multisite. Let's go.
You're listening to Unseminary's All About Multisite podcast. Are you launching another location and not sure where to start? Do you already have a few campuses, but they're not thriving as much as you'd like? We've gathered industry-leading church leaders to help answer all of your multisite church questions. Unseminary, stuff you wish they taught in seminary.
Oh, hey, everybody. Welcome to Unseminary's All About Multisite. Today, we are diving in really just about multi-site. And we've got some experts on the line. It's going to be an incredible show. We've got some great questions that have come in from our audience. And I want to remind you, if you're listening in, we do this once a month, the last Wednesday of the month, and it's all driven by your questions. And so we need you to send questions in. So if you've got a question about multi-site, maybe you've got one location and you're thinking about going to 2, or maybe you don't have any locations yet. You're wondering about, you know, as you step into it, or maybe you've got 5 or 6 and you're running into some problems. We would love to give you our time and to answer your questions. So all you need to do is submit them. Just pick up your phone, record them with that nice voice memo app on your phone. Email them over to me, rich@unseminary.com, and maybe you can get on a future episode. Well, I want to introduce you to our panel. This is our incredible panel of multi-site ninjas. Today, we're going to ask each one of them what's a book that they're reading these days that they're digging into. First, I want to introduce you to Natalie Frisk. She is our family ministry expert. She was a part of the team at the Meeting House in the Greater Toronto area. She's a Canadian. Don't hold it against her. Natalie, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Rich.
What are you reading? I'm intrigued to know what you're reading because I know you are a reader.
I am a reader. I'm actually reading, as is kind of often the case for me, I have a few books on the go right now.
Yes.
One, though, that I love and would recommend heartily to your audience far and wide is Ruth Haley Barton's book, Strengthening the Soul of Your Leadership.
That's a great book.
It's a few years old, but it's definitely a fantastic read. And we're just starting to go through it with one of our teams together. So
nice. Really,
yeah, fantastic. Okay.
Fantastic. Next, I want to introduce you to Greg Curtis. He is really our connections and assimilation expert, leads at a church called Eastside, which is a fantastic church. They're doing an amazing job seeing all kinds of people get connected. Greg, what is a book that you've been reading these days?
Well, I've got a lot of books that I've got going on, but some of the most high impact books that I've read, either that I'm currently reading or last one, and not to kiss you over the internet here, but it's your book, The Church Growth Flywheel, man. I think that that's a great book.
I got to send you $20 now. You're costing me money. We haven't even started yet.
Well, my lunch budget was a little low, so here we go. No, it's such a good, it's brief, it's toothy, it's comprehensive on people who want to just develop their church and their campuses. So I just think it's got it all. And I think for senior leadership all the way down to people just running processes, I think it's a great tool, great reference.
And now what is toothy? I don't know. I've never heard that word before. What does mean toothy mean?
Toothy. It's got bite to it. It does. It's got, you know, it's got nice. Some teeth. I don't know.
Okay, that's good. No, that's good. That's good. Love that. Well, thanks so much.
The Power of Moments by Chip Adenteith. I know people are talking about it, but it's just super good on creating moments both in worship and in assimilation, whether on whatever campus. The Road Back to You by Ian Morgan Cron is great on the Enneagram for your listeners that are into the Enneagram, which is a way of understanding people's individual bents a very ancient way. And it's just really, really fun to do. And especially in managing people, loving people, assimilating people.
That's very cool.
And I would also say 18 Minutes by Peter Bregman. It is probably the most motivational, great way to learn how to focus and manage your time that I've seen probably in decades. It's just awesome.
That's cool. That's really good. That's fantastic. Ben Stapley is our communications and service programming expert. He's a really great guy. Super helpful. Currently serves at the Liquid Church in New Jersey, a fantastic church, and is really, like I say, one of the best, most helpful leaders that I know. Ben, welcome to the show. What's a book that you're reading?
Yeah, two that I just recently enjoyed over the past month are Boundaries for Leaders by Henry Cloud. It's always great being in the nonprofit environment to set up your own boundaries. Other people aren't going to set them up for you, so you need to set them up for yourself. Yep. So what does it look like? How do you do that? And then the other big one that's been super helpful for me thinking organizationally and also personally is Building a Story Brand by Donald Miller. Oh, so fantastic. What is my story brand? How has God wired me? And how am I living in light of that and communicating that? But then organizationally for a church, what is God uniquely doing there? And how do we not just cut and paste from some other church? How do we identify what our story is, live it out, and then communicate it out as well?
Very cool. Recently I've been reading same kind of thing. I feel like we all have, like, you know, this is maybe the nature of being in leadership. You just kind of have constantly a number of books on the go. But one that really stuck out to me in this last couple months was Sheryl Sandberg's book, which I know is like old. It's like 3 years old. Lean In, which I just found. I have a number of female leaders in my life. Obviously, my wife, my daughter, and then I in my ministry, we lead a ministry to young leaders, to young female leaders particularly. And so I found that book really, it was great. I think it was really challenging. And I didn't know, frankly, I was like, I don't know, because it's targeted specifically at women. I was like, I don't know what that'll be like. But actually, I loved it. I found her really a robust author just in her craft, but then also what she was saying was just fantastic. So that is a book that has stuck out to me. Well, we're going to jump into our questions. Again, if you've got questions that you want us to deal with, please just send them in. I'd love to have them. Let's jump into our first one. We've got David from the Meeting House, but this is not the same Meeting House that Natalie works at in PA. Let's take a look here.
Hey, Rich. My name is David Calavan. I'm the executive pastor at the Meeting House in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. We're a church that's about 106 years old and went to a second campus through a merger about 3 years ago. We run around 1,600 Sunday weekend attendance. My question around multi-site is maybe a little bit more boring, but it has to do with budgets and spending plans. I'm curious what the best practices are on doing budgets and spending plans for your various campuses. Is it best to give each campus a full budget and spending plan and ask them to do all the purchasing and everything for all the ministry that we would ask them to do? Or is it best practice to give them a really trimmed down budget and ask them to only use that for contextualizing the ministry at their particular campus, and the majority of the expenses are taken on by central campus? Or is there a third way that I'm not even aware of?
All right. Great question, I think, from David there. I think this really gets at the heart, really. I think we can talk about structure in multi-site. We can talk about how is leadership decisions made, but really a lot of it comes down to who gets to spend what money. So this is really an important conversation, important thing for us to lean in on. How is revenue categorized in your campus? How much data does the campus team get is kind of an interesting piece of this. What does the annual budget cycle look like? How are you guys making decisions? And then I'd also love to hear if there's a little, what are the tensions are in this area? I know all of us, I think we feel this tension. It can be hard to figure out and to sort through. And so I'd love to hear that. Maybe Natalie, we could start with you. When you think about some of these budget related issues, how do you process that at the Meeting House?
Yeah. First of all, I just must say to my brother there at the Meeting House PA, David, hello. And I love that he asked, is there a third way? It's so Anabaptist of you, and I love it.
even in budgeting, they're trying to find a third way.
There's a third way option. I love the question.
That's great.
When it comes to how we kind of have done things at the Meeting House, we There's definitely been some jostling around throughout my time there. I'm sure things look quite a bit different now than they did when Rich was on staff with us. What's that been? 10, 11 years?
It's a long time. It's ancient history. I'm ancient history in the meeting,
You really
house.
Are. You really are.
a fossil.
but yeah, so essentially what things look like right now, and again, we have kind of tried to work through on this to see what has been the best to reduce as many tensions as possible, you know, to kind of get into that groove. So definitely a lot of it has been trial and error, but we have a central ministry budget that basically encompasses the basic things that are done for all of our sites. So for example, obviously any teaching that's done is centrally based. We do cross-regional, so all of our locations training, our curriculum creation is centrally based. You know, all of those kind of big budget costs are encompassed into the central budget. We also have, you know, the overarching things that you sometimes forget and then are like, oh yeah, those are budget pieces that we need to care about. So music licensing for all of our sites are taken care of in a central budget. Mm. You know, all of those kind of little nitty gritty things that all get encompassed in any type of licensing, actually, any type of kind of those annual fees, we'll call them, would get encompassed into our central budget. And then the campuses have a budget for local ministry. So those things would include site-specific compassion initiatives, so kind of like local compassion things, community events, site-specific training. Our lead pastors and youth pastors would have their own specific budgets for, you know, one-on-ones and any additional trainings they want to do with their teams specifically and things like that. So there's definitely like an overarching budget that is centrally based, and then there's the stream. So kind of more along the lines of, I think it was the second option that David presented. Mm-hmm. When it comes to tensions, I would actually say I, you know, jokingly, there are always tensions when it comes to money. Mm-hmm. That just is the reality of life, I think. Yeah. But I think we've gotten to a place in our structure in particular with 18 campuses where what we have now definitely represents something we've worked towards in trial and error. So the other piece I didn't mention on top of that is also we have what is considered like a growth budget. So things that we are doing in addition to, so that would actually encompass, you know, launching a campus and things like that. Any growth pieces every once in a while that will include a new online initiative, for example, and things like that, those mm-hmm. larger pieces. And so when it comes to the site-specific budget, then there would be, I guess, a launch budget, but it wouldn't necessarily be encompassed by the site. It would actually be encompassed centrally through that growth budget.
Okay. Yep.
And I must say, you know, with the amazing partnership that we have with, and I'm going to plug our wonderful sponsor, Portable Church. You know, when we have an organization like Portable Church, you know, we know the costs that are going to be involved in a site launch. We know all those things as a result of, you know, what we've done in the past and what we need. So the needs that Portable Church is able to help us with are incredible. And we are pretty convinced of what is needed for launching a site. So so the tensions have definitely been minimized as we have grown and as we have kind of worked through these different things. But as always, when you're in budgeting season, the tensions are there. You know, for example, we are in dire need, and I say dire need, and everyone on staff would agree, we are in dire need of a new website. We need to get there. It's required. And
it's kind of true. As
it is. It is. No, there's no one disagreeing with that. And, you know, then you come up to the reality of, okay, we really need this for our online presence, but we also know the potential website. And so then it comes against, okay, online costs versus practical, tangible ministry costs in real life at real campuses. And, and I mean, we could have a whole show on that piece. And we're, I know we're talking about online and at our sites in a little bit, but these things actually do, you know, run up against each other when it comes to budgeting season. So super important things to take into consideration, and working through those tensions is not always fun, but always really important. So,
yeah, one of the things I love about the Meeting House, well, I'm sure this would be the same of both the Ontario and Pennsylvania Meeting House, because you're in similar stream, the kind of Anabaptist stream. There's an interesting impact there that the value of simplicity has on budgeting that doesn't, I think, necessarily translate to the broader evangelical world. And that, you know, there is, that's actually one of the things I've said to other churches. I've said, listen, the because people are like, how is it that the Meeting House has been able to do 18 campuses? And I said, well, they have a value on simplicity, which that they don't spend money if they don't need to. And that has actually allowed them to launch more quickly because there's a lighter footprint. The actual individual cost of a launch is lower. So you're able to do more of them. And so that's as a, both having lived inside that and outside that, I think has been a real strategic advantage that I think the Lord has used in your, just one quick question. I noticed when at the Meeting House, when you talk about funding, you actually talk about three different funds, general fund, growth fund, and compassion fund. You kind of mentioned those a little bit. But are those funded independently, and or and how do so? Like, if people give to your compassion fund, does that starve the general fund, and how do you, or has that all just worked out magically, and people just give to all three?
That's a great question. So our general fund is I think we would say is our least sexy fund in that what you need to do to survive to have our sites being able to open a door on a Sunday morning is the giving comes through the general fund. But you know, when you talk about general fund, you're literally talking about keeping the lights on and all those kinds of things, which makes it a less interesting fund for people to give to. When we talk about compassion, that's obviously anything that we're funding internationally or locally. And so people tend to give to that because they see the need and they want to meet that need, right? And so because it comes across as a more dire need, then people are giving. And so we have found historically that people give to compassion and they'll give to growth because they love the idea of it, right? They love the idea of being able to open more seats, to be able to extend the mission, to be able to evangelize to more people in more cities or whatever. But the general fund giving is always the kind of standard. We need to articulate well what that need is. And it has worked out in our favor over the years. I think each time, and it's not often that we'll have to have Bruxy, our teaching pastor, you know, give a little plug to say, hey, you know what? We're actually a little bit behind in our need to meet, you know, our general budget. And as he communicates that, people give and it kind of balances things out. So,
That's cool.
Yeah, I think having those also has, allowed our community to feel like they, are kind of aware of and connect in with the mission. So to have those three budgets, I mean, we could just wrap everything into one and just, you know, give as we see fit and do what we need to do. But this actually allows some more buy-in from our community and it has worked out quite well.
That's good. Greg, how are you guys wrestling with the, you know, the kind of, you know, financial stuff at Eastside these days?
Well, when it comes to multi-site and how we do that, first off, I want to say we use Portable Church as well. So I want to shout out to them.
That's two plugs. Wow.
With that. Yeah.
Okay.
We use that on our sites. Now, our assimilation budget, which is what I oversee, like all the budgets really for the different sites, are for us are centralized. And then they're categorized when they can be by campus. You know, for instance, what we do in our assimilation environment called Next Steps has just a ton of giveaways, a ton of fun things, you know, from backpacks to prizes to, you know, just lots of swag. And so it centrally manage those purchases, but we will say, okay, this percentage of those purchases is for this campus. This percentage is for that. And we'll charge it and code it, manage and track it that way, but centrally. So, but any expenses that involve all the campuses that can't be categorized, for instance, if I do training with all the leaders from all the campuses in one event, well, that cost is just central. It's okay. Central covers that. One of the benefits of operating a lot of the budget from a central perspective is that because we purchase a giveaway, so many things in assimilation as well as supplies, and I imagine a lot of ministries have at least supplies and lots of purchases mm-hmm. like that. We're able to buy inventory in bulk that way and get it cheaper right. rather than every campus just getting a little bit of everything.
Yep.
And then we handle that by having a storeroom. Our campuses, our vision has been to reach those within a 20-mile radius of our Anaheim campus. And so we have a big storeroom and they could just pick it up that way. And what we do is Wednesday is Anaheim office day. So everybody comes into the office
okay, that's cool. in
Anaheim. Yeah. Now we have, as some of your listeners may remember, we do have a campus in Park Rapids, Minnesota. Mm-hmm. So for them, that's Skype and Zoom day. And they're in our meetings that right. way. And they come in that way.
And
so,
now maybe in January or February, they say, you know, I just got to go to Anaheim, you know, for one of those
yeah,
Wednesdays.
Yeah, to come in person. We actually do have a day where they fly in that yes. period of time. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, right.
Another benefit to handling it that way, doing it centrally in terms of purchases, is that it does preserve branding and there's no surprises that if you're really wanting to preserve a brand with mm-hmm. what you purchase, that if that's all purchased centrally, that you know, there's no surprises there. Mm-hmm. Our budget cycle is September through August every
okay.
year.
Yep. School
it's
year.
Typical. Kind of. We request, but I manage the assimilation budget. So the leader of each budget, even if that goes across campuses, I do the request for that and approve that. And I'm the only one that really looks at that, though it's not like it's hidden, but mm-hmm. I'm the main one who looks at that. And one of the tensions that we manage in all of this that we're still figuring out, but we're working on it right now, is when you purchase all these things centrally through a centralized budget for all the campuses. See, we have very few paid admins. I have no paid admins in my mm-hmm. department. They're mm-hmm. all volunteers who have come up and spend 2 to 3 days a week in the
That's
office.
Amazing. That's great.
Well, now it is amazing. And they're really using their gifts that way. But what is a concern is that when they started serving before we had campuses, and then mm-hmm. now we've got 4 campuses, and the ordering and inventorying, all of a sudden their role has very much expanded to where they have like a volunteer central team role. Mm. And that's a little much. That's a little much. So that's a tension that I think might be good to throw out to your listeners is, mm-hmm. is to consider from an assimilation viewpoint, what is the impact on volunteers who were once managing it at one level, and then you go mm-hmm. multi-site or add sites, does that mean that their volunteer hours have to increase by definition?
Right.
And how does that work? And sometimes this budgeting issue, that's an unintended consequence of a centralized budget, that you'll have volunteers that all of a sudden become adjunct central team members and you didn't realize it.
Yeah. Well, and we've seen this in, and it sounds like you have a similar scenario, but so many of our churches, once you get beyond a couple campuses, you end up having some sort of warehouse that you're managing all this stuff in. And you have actually one of the best ones is the Meeting House in Ontario. It's crazy. The central warehouse there is amazing. But part of what I love is, again, I'm a little bit of a church leadership wonk. I love going to a multi-site central campuses because you, and I'll hunt around and be like, where is it? Somewhere in here, there is a pile of stuff. But you're right. When it was just one location, the googly eyes for the kids ministry did not take up that much space and were not that hard to manage. But once you get 5, 6, 7 locations, man, there's a whole production there. And how do you get people? Now, Greg, what do you guys do around or do you track kind of financial performance? He didn't actually ask this question. It might be underlying what he was asking. But is there a financial performance piece of the equation there around kind of revenue versus expenses happening? And there may not be, but what does that look like for you guys?
We do look at that, but we are in such a huge growth surge
right.
that we're not looking at it in the way that some other churches might have to, or even yep. in ways that we've done in the past, because yep. we're kind of we're chasing
so many new people.
Some yeah. prolific results right now. And so, we're not doing that, at the level that we used to, but everything is looked at by multiple eyes, like not just mine. You know,
no, yeah, that makes sense.
Before we do some things, but we're quick to make necessary expenditures, and we make We're a simple church. We may not be Anabaptist, but we're very conservative in our spending. And yes. So it's a rare thing to do that.
Yeah, that's
you
great.
Can always join us, Greg. Don't
we always good. But I got to tell you, I do not, a special shout out to a volunteer, Esther McLaughlin, man. She, a volunteer, just runs that central warehouse, that inventory, mm-hmm. does all the ordering, makes mm-hmm. sure that, you know, that everybody in all those campuses will come to her, you know, to make amazing, that happen. Right? And it's a beautiful thing when you see everybody participating at that
point. I know we've talked about it in the past on the show around, I love your backpack thing and the whole people that come, if you haven't heard references before, they're in their next process, they get, you know, this backpack and they fill things. And that sounds great to you and us as leaders, but somebody's got to figure out how to get those backpacks to those people, make sure there's enough of them.
Exactly.
If you make, and that sounds like a simple thing, but you start doing that in multiple locations, it becomes exponentially more complex. And so, yeah, the Esters of the world are our heroes for sure. Ben, when Absolutely. You think about finances at Liquid, how are you wrestling through those issues? What does it look like, for you?
Yeah. Brad asked, what are some of the best practices that we have in relationship to this? And for me, it's having that openness with staff to provide accuracy. And some people say, hey, how much openness do you have here? When showing the numbers, and especially in relationship to multi-site, how much does this one bring in terms of revenue compared to this one? And I'd say as much openness where you start to feel uncomfortable. If you are comfortable with your level of openness from a leadership standpoint, you're probably not being open enough. So you need to be a little bit uncomfortable with releasing that information and entrusting it with your staff that you trust. So the reason I say that, that's a best practice to be open with that, because it provides accuracy. So most churches, when they launch, they don't launch as a multi-site, they launch as a single site, and they start to develop sites as they go on. Mm-hmm. Because of that, usually the founding, the launching site will be the largest in size and therefore have the most revenue related to it. This can sometimes cause a false assumption in staff members that they're getting the majority of the toys and the resources because they're most favored, and they're not comparing it to the revenue that site is bringing in. And so once you start to do that, people's eyes are opened and they have a better understanding, and it alleviates the tension between campuses and resource allocation. And then beyond giving that accuracy and relieving that tension, it helps people better understand why they may not be receiving as much resources as another campus, and will help compel them to step up the game in relationship to that. So that's the first thing I'd say, is openness provides that that accuracy. Mm-hmm. Openness also provides accountability. So mm-hmm. now we all know where we all stand, we right. can be held to better accountability, which is great, right? So we know which campuses are in the black, but then also which ones are in the red as well. In relationship to that, I would say as much as you can, when you give, campuses not only need accountability, but they need authority. So mm-hmm. that's one of the questions that Brad asked, right? Like, how much authority does each campus have? Or is finances just handled from a central perspective? Mm-hmm. Again, this should be something where you feel a little bit uncomfortable as a leader, handing over more authority to the campuses. So what would that look like for them to do that? That could be something, them doing their own fundraising campaign. That campus pastor, instead of the lead pastor, meeting with the high-end donors at that site, them tailor-making their donor letter for the year that talks about their campus needs.
Are you doing that at Liquid?
We are considering it. You ask all these questions about Liquid, Rich, which I appreciate. And then I also cap you off as well.
Yes. Because I think that is a tension. You've hit a tension there that I think a lot of times we would love to, as an executive pastor, I would love to say to our campuses, hey, you need to perform better financially. But then if I don't give them tools to actually do that, then why am I, I'm just making them jump higher without saying, you know, if I'm not actually going to let them, you know, do their own campaign or whatever.
Yeah, one of the things that we did recently, I've been on staff for 3 years, and this past mm-hmm. year, we came out with staff with that openness, which I really appreciated, where I said, hey, we're going to let you know where all the campuses stand in light of that. Mm-hmm. And then I know there's conversations happening behind the doors with the CP saying, now mm-hmm. here are the tools to help you better bring that up. We're not only giving you the accountability, we're now going to give you some authority as well. What that looks like, mm-hmm. I'm not privy to those conversations.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yep.
Towards that. Mm-hmm. Brad asked the question about the financial year. When do you start? When do you stop at Liquid? We go on the calendar year. Mm-hmm. And I would say in relationship to that, even relationship to his bigger question about financial model, how much of it is centralized, how much is decentralized, I would advocate for consistency, where I'm sure you've seen this as well. You've seen churches kind of flip-flop back and forth, and we'll try one model for 1 year and then another model for 2 years and then go back, which then makes it difficult for you to benchmark your success because you're not comparing models to models. The numbers are a little skewed. So beyond a particular model, I would advocate more for a consistency of models and then working within it, within its own pros and cons, because they all have pros and cons. And then the last thing in relationship to finances, I would say this, and I know we're going to touch on Church Online at the end, but I'll start to whet the whistle here. I would say churches need to consider launching an online campus first so that they can spiritually disciple people in a digital environment. But then for them to be aware that there are huge financial benefits for you to launch this type of campus as you are in a multi-site environment. Big reason is because it has minimal overhead. And because of that, it will probably become one of your most solvent campuses. Mm-hmm. Now, let me hit the brakes here. Let me pump the brakes. I'm not saying start a campus, an online campus, to make money. What I'm saying is be aware and be wise that this is an avenue for you to minister to people first and foremost. Mm-hmm. And then, because of its low overhead, it actually is a campus that will be in the black, which will then allow you to do more ministry and reach more people. So make sure you put the horse before the cart here, mm-hmm. and have the desire to reach people's souls and to minister to them first, and then see what God does from that. We've seen that in our environment. I know other churches have seen that as well. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to, at this point, just educate other people who haven't considered that to make them aware of this huge benefit and how it could financially help their church as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that I would agree with you on that, the thing about Church Online from a financial perspective, particularly now, so many of us, and I was in a lot of the spending stuff early on 2009, 10, 11, 12, we spent a lot of money. So many churches spent a lot of money on trying to get Church Online up for it to work well. And then two things happened. One, the major thing was our friend Mark Zuckerberg came along, because we were always trying to figure out, how do we make a chat thing that actually connects with Facebook, that has people's, because you'd have Billy Bob 2013 comes into the chat room and you're like, this is just not helpful. This is not a real person. Is this really driving? And then what did Mark Zuckerberg did? He just came and said, here, you can have it. It's called Facebook Live. Just take it and use it. There's a lot of churches that should be doing that aren't doing it today. That's a great flag for sure. Well, that's good. I think one of the things, just from my seat on this, this financial thing, and you kind of touched on it a little bit there, Ben, was early on, I think your model, whatever your financial model is, should defer to younger campuses. So newer campuses should be a better deal for them. It should actually, they should be well-funded. They should be, we should equip them well, not starve them out of the gate. From my perspective, I want to make sure that those campuses really launch well. And I think that when you do that, that helps you to actually launch more down the road than when you support the ones that are just getting out the gate. All right. Well, we're going to jump into the next question. This one is from Brad from Journey Church in Ohio. Let's listen in to see what Brad has to say.
In about 30 minutes, yeah.
Hello. Here we go.
Hi, Rich. My name is Brad Andrus. I'm with Journey Church in Fremont, Ohio. We are a semi-rural church. We average about 300 on Sunday mornings. We've just launched a church plant this past year using some multi-site strategies in a town of about 3,000 people. We're considering merging with a church in about 30 minutes, the opposite direction of where that church plant was located. Considering that in the fall of 2018, at our core, we believe healthy churches can thrive in rural areas. And we are looking to create a network of churches of small to medium-sized churches in rural communities throughout Ohio. So the question that I have is, what models are there for launching a church as multi-site with the plan to transition that church into its own sovereign entity within 3 to 5 years? Further, are there any models that are doing this on a scale of average attendance at 500 or less The tension that we feel in our context is that brand recognition at our launch is going to give us weight and momentum. However, in the long term, we don't foresee setting up things such as central services. We're committed to a live preaching model rather than video options. And so therefore, our hope is to provide a preaching team in the beginning stages, and then eventually the church will transition its campus leader into becoming its own lead pastor again and to its own sovereign church within the 3 to 5 year period. So any suggestions on models or any ideas on this would be great. Thanks.
Appreciate that question, Brad. Really appreciate you jumping. It's an interesting question. When I came across this one, I was like, oh, there's some interesting stuff here. Now, just so everybody know, everybody who's on today's call, our experts, all their, at least from the outside, and you guys can debunk this if I'm not seeing it correctly, their approach has been to kind of launch campuses and keep launching campuses, to use this model as and not really predictive towards, hey, we want these to end up becoming independent entities. I did like that you used the word sovereign entity, Brad, that I think brought up the intelligent quotient in the podcast. So I appreciate you doing that. But so we could talk specifically about this. You know, do you see this as a way to launch? Have you seen that? But then even more specifically, what is your model long-term for campuses? This kind of, how do you see beyond the kind of launch phase? What does it look like? How do you kind of keep them? And then how are you working in smaller communities? I know, I think all of the churches that are represented here, either you as a leader or the church specifically, are thinking about or doing things that are in necessarily smaller communities. I would love to hear about that as well. So kind of using Brad's question as a jump off point, Greg, how do you think about this, you know, this idea of model, this idea of release, you know, smaller communities, all that? What does that look like for you?
Well, I think that Brad and his church are going to have to realize that what they have is really a church planting vision that's using a multi-site strategy for the launch.
Yep.
That if their end game is an autonomous thing, you just need to declare that, and that we are church planting, but we're going to use a multi-site strategy to birth that. What's interesting, you know, he mentioned that they're considering merging a church, and how I got back at Eastside for the second time was that our church merged in with Eastside when it moved it to a new location that was between us, because I was pastoring one of their daughter churches that I was at for 27 years. Hmm. And so our journey was actually the opposite, where we became for 1 month Eastside's Yorba Linda campus before the merge. And then we obviously gave up our autonomy to merge into the larger congregation. Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of an interesting deal there. But and merges is something that ours was a very successful merge. And I know that that's a conversation for another podcast. But mm-hmm. I think that because they see this as ultimately a church plant that's autonomous and sovereign at the end, that the live teaching is vital to become independent. Because once people get hooked on whatever your central teacher is, that's going to be a little bit disruptive to go, to bond with a different teacher. In fact, I was just talking to somebody last night. I was talking to my brother, who's mm-hmm. been attending a multi-site for several years, but then they gave it over to a live teacher and they just feel completely disconnected now.
Oh, yeah, right.
Is that interesting? Yeah.
Yeah,
that was an interesting thing over in the Atlanta area. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so what I think is important is to realize that live teaching is vital if you see this becoming an independent congregation, your site that you're launching. Mm-hmm. If it's going to be independent, I think some live teaching to start is really good. The benefits of launching their church plant as a multi-site at the beginning is all the resources from the mothership, the guidance. It comes in with brand recognition. You don't have to design things, that church plants do, and logos, whatever. That's all done. And you get to extend the reach of what God's doing in your central church to people who can't make the drive over there. And the downside mm-hmm. is that when people know that independence is coming, then there's that gap between what they want to do and what you discern they can do. Mm-hmm. And so it's almost like you have to navigate that like a sailor does the opposing wind to get where you want to go. Mm. And so the approach to me would be a little bit like raising a teen. You have to identify the opportunities ahead of time and the benchmarks for independence for that site that may become its own congregation. and then determine ahead of time the new responsibilities that have to go with each. And I think if you do that just like you do with your kids, your teens, I think you'll be ready for what's ahead, just not having this dream. We want it to be autonomous and let that, you know, it can be a little too messy at that point. And then when it comes to the assimilation journey on these multi-sites, I think one of the benefits of definitely launching a church plant, even if you think it's going to be independent someday, you just got to have a very centrally navigated assimilation plan that reminds me a little bit of Disneyland. I think I shared once that I found out that Mickey Mouse, there are 140 some odd people who play Mickey Mouse at various
right.
The various Disneylands. And the amazing thing is if you have a kid who goes to the Anaheim Disneyland and gets Mickey Mouse's autograph, and their cousin goes to Disney World in Florida and gets Mickey Mouse's autograph, if they get together for the family reunion and compare autograph books, hey, Mickey Mouse signed mine, and oh, Mickey Mouse signed mine, it will be the same signature.
Right.
And I think that, you know, when you launch, you know, the difficult thing is if you're going to be an independent church, when you launch, everything has to have the same signature. And, but you can have ongoing collaboration in the early years. And I think that that can make the mothership or the central church that's launching the campus richer if there's learnings. And what we do is we evaluate things that are learning from the campuses that we launch. And then annually we make adjustments, especially in assimilation. Like, do we change some things in next steps? Because we're going to reprint the booklets every year. The new budget kicks in. And we'll take the best learnings from the campuses, make some adjustments in the program. Right. Maybe it's going to be something that's going to save money. Maybe it's something that's going to just kind of amp up the number of people who get connected in groups and teams. And, you know, that can be learned each way. But it's an interesting, you know, Brad has an interesting thing, you know, where they have the vision and desire of it being an autonomous church. You just have to navigate that one, right?
Yeah. And I wonder, and Brad, again, I appreciate you know, submitting this question, a little bit of pushback. I wonder how much the brand value is if long-term you're going to change it. You know, if, because there's a way for you to leverage the, all the resources of a multi-site church without actually being, you know, calling it the same thing. So give you an example. I have a friend of mine who's planting a church, a few hundred, you know, there are a few hundred people, they're a year and a bit in. When you look at what they've done, they've leveraged off of, a larger multi-site church for like all their series graphics, their like kids materials, for a bunch of other things, but their kind of core identity is core to their church. You know, their core stuff is still them. And so they've been able to kind of leverage a bit of both worlds. I wonder if ultimately, you know, you should even from the beginning be saying, hey, maybe we kind of make our own independent thing, but then, you know, we're going to try to leverage those things that aren't the core identity. And then just to underline, you know, what Greg's saying, you know, I've seen too many campuses and then too many church plants fumble the ball on assimilation in the first 3 months when they have the most guests that they'll ever have in their entire history. That's the percentage of guests that you have in those early days is so high. And if you're not on your game from an assimilation point of view, you just need to follow everything, you know, that Greg says. But you know, if you need to make sure you've got that game tooled up really, really well in those early days, particularly. Natalie, how would you think about this? What advice could you offer in to Brad as he's thinking about this conversation?
Yeah, first, I would definitely just kind of echo a number of things that Greg just said. And I think one of the things that I would highlight is the idea that you don't want your community to feel like they've been there's been a bait and switch go on. So I think, you know, right from the beginning, if the intent is to go in that direction, it needs to be stated right away. You know, this is the plan. This is where we're going. This is the long-term strategy, as opposed to people feeling like they're getting comfortable into something and they've bought into something. And then things are getting
changed
on them. So I would say just the clarity of that vision right from the beginning is vital. And I guess, you know, in reality, I would probably throw back a few questions as far as the benefits to doing that long-term plan, that long-term strategy. Just in regards to, is that a win? Is that a win long-term? I would just maybe ask that question. You know, and working back from what is the long-term win for these locations, for these sovereign entities, what is the win? And then working backwards from that, I think would be helpful. Mm-hmm. For us, first, there is the entire concept around the nature of a launch or a, you know, it kind of in some ways can look like a church plant, and in some ways it is a separate thing. So we often will find where people are already connected and meeting around the Meeting House teaching. So for example, I mean, right now we have people meeting in what we call distance groups kind of all over the place. I think the place that often gets tossed around is, you know, just as an example outside of our sphere, you know, there's a group in Calgary, Alberta, which for my American friend listeners who maybe aren't as familiar with Canadian geography, that's pretty far west.
The middle of nowhere.
We're talking Montana North, right? Is that
yes.
right? Yeah. So, so they're pretty far out there for us. And so then, you know, having a conversation, what would that look like if there was a location there? Is there enough kind of uptake? Are there enough people that are kind of gathered around this mission and vision and kind of examining that kind of a critical mass, I think, there? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But where we have actual launch happening, for example, not too long ago, we launched a location in London, Ontario, which is about an hour and a half away from the border of Detroit, Michigan, mm-hmm. helping my American friends. You know, as we lead up to a launch, there is a lot of connection points with the central campus. There is a lot of key touch points that are happening. And then into the first couple of months of a launch, there is oftentimes a central staffer there on a Sunday morning just to show moral support and any additional maybe guidance or direction that is needed, that those touch points remain for quite a while. And then slowly things are kind of pulled back and that location becomes their own entity in the sense of how they are connecting with all of the key checkpoints of what a Meeting House location is. Mm-hmm. Now, when it comes to this question, actually, we are doing some really, I think, we're having some really interesting conversations right now at the Meeting House in regards to what would a, for lack of a better term, maybe a network of churches look like in our regard. So mm-hmm. The first, if you thought of it as kind of concentric circles, so you've got the inside, the innermost circle being the Meeting House central location, the Meeting House proper. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got all of these, who we are, what we are, our branding, our teaching, all of these core values are right in the middle of that circle.
And they're a part of the organization, I'm assuming. It's like one organization.
That's Meeting House proper. So mm-hmm. When it comes to the Meeting House centrally located and our Meeting House locations, mm-hmm. they would all be part of that Meeting House proper where all those kind of check boxes are mm-hmm. you know, and then imagine a second concentric circle that we would call the Meeting House affiliated. And so those are churches that may want to, and we have a number of these, track with our teaching. We have people that want to use our video teaching in real time, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They borrow on some of our branding, all those kinds of things. They would be kind of the Meeting House affiliated churches. And then we are stepping into this kind of new landscape where there's people that are interested in some resource sharing, but not necessarily all of our resource sharing. Mm. They want to borrow some things, but they don't necessarily want to be affiliated wholeheartedly with us. They, you know, there's anyway, we have seen this opportunity for something that is expanding kind of into different churches, different church worlds, where we can be a resource and a value to them. And in the same right, actually, there are some opportunities for these other churches that, again, might not be meeting house affiliates, but may have some great things that they could also kind of contribute and speak into what we're doing. So we're in this exploration phase right now at the Meeting House as to what would a network in this regard look like. And so when I hear a little bit of Brad's question, I think there's certain flex of it for some of the things that we're exploring right now. And I think that there is something to the conversation in the larger church community. Mm-hmm. How do we, with the kingdom resources that we have, how do we strategize and do all of these things in an effective way where we can continue to grow and continue to develop? So it's a great question, Brad. There's a lot to wrestle through with it, but thank you for bringing it up.
That's great. Ben, how are you thinking about this issue, you know, that Brad brings up here?
I love that Brad and Journey Church are doing the hard and the unsexy work of laying the groundwork before they launch campuses, because you think of the house metaphor, right? You only lay the foundation once. You could always repaint the walls whenever you want down the road, but you're only going to lay that foundation once, which they're wrestling that through. They're seeking the wisdom of Rich Birch to make sure they do this right, which is awesome. But I would probably parrot some of the things that Greg and Natalie have brought up in terms of it may be difficult to switch horses in mid-stride. So if they're ultimately going to go to a different model, then maybe launching with that model would be a better idea. I think I feel this tension the most in relationship to whoever their visual leadership is, because it's very hard for people to, once they've gained an affinity towards this guy or this gal leading this particular church, if your game plan is to take them out and parachute someone else in, then you're going to hit a speed bump there. I like to say that whenever you replace visual leadership, you never gain people right away. You always lose people, because people don't know who the new person coming is. Mm-hmm. But people who have affinity for the person who's leaving, to say, I'm going to leave with them as well. Mm-hmm. Now, that will always be, you always experience a short-term loss and a speed bump there. Hopefully, you'll experience a long-term gain with those guests and get the ones you lost back and add additional ones. But if you already know you're going to go there, well, why don't you just rip off the Band-Aid right away and start with that model instead of implementing it right away. Mm-hmm. The other thing I'd encourage Brad, and I know for myself as well, and the model here, they sound like they've got a great launch strategy and they're thinking that through well, but I would challenge them, and maybe they do have this and he just didn't bring up the question, but for anyone who's launching, not only think about your launch model, but what's your growth model as well. So great. You know how many guests and volunteers that you need to send to the campus. Oftentimes I hear 300 is a good size to launch a campus with. Awesome. Churches usually think that through well and execute that well, but then they leave it there. They don't think through what the growth strategy is going to be. Well, what is it going to take when we reach 500, who can we hire on staff? What is the next position then? When we reach 750, when we reach 1,000, what does that look like? And beyond like that, individual site growing, what would it look like for that site to be ascending site as well? And then continue that that cycle of birth, growth, and then replication. I don't hear a lot of churches thinking that through as they're strategizing. They're strategizing the launch, the short-term for future, but not the long-term, which obviously has a huge impact on it. So I would try to bake both of those things at the same time when you're going forth with that, and making sure that your launching sites are positioned, and the expectation is they're going to be sending sites as well. Mm-hmm.
Very cool, dude. That's great. Great input. Again, Brad, really appreciate you leaning in. Just to echo what Ben said there, I love that you're trying to wrestle through this, you know, even before you launch, because I will get calls every once in a while from churches that have done multi-site, and they get a couple campuses out the gate, and they're like, we didn't think about any of this before we got launched. And the fact that you're thinking it through now, I think is going to bode well, regardless of where you end up, you know, long-term. Really appreciate that. Well, we're going to jump into the third question. So this is where I get to ask a question of our experts and hear where they're at. And in particular today, I want to think a little bit about kind of the online side, the kind of online media Church Online, the kind of website, how that it fits together. It seems like to me that that is an it's an incredibly important, it's an irreparable, I was the word I was trying to find there, part of a multi-site strategy. The kind of online piece of the puzzle is a critical piece of what happens in multi-site churches. So I'd love to hear, maybe Ben, let's start with you. How do you think about, you know, Church Online? I know you lead Church Online at your church. I won't mention the name. Because I see every week and I always see these great photos of you leading with your co-host, and the co-host is always standing on a few things of foam flooring. So Ben, tell us a little bit about how you think through the, not just Church Online, but kind of how the online environment in general, website, all that, apps, you just launched an app. How does all that fit together? And how, particularly, how does that impact then the growth of your church?
Yeah, I would say it's huge. I don't do a good Trump impersonation, but that would be my Trump impersonation right there. It's huge. Yeah. It's going to be big and it's going to be beautiful. It's for me, when I look at the next decade, and for myself, and then for the people I'm leading to leverage us for the next decade, I see multi-site along with social media and church online is the three major ways in which churches can grow. And so this is something that's close to my heart because I see a huge potential in it. Mm-hmm. And beyond the potential, it's only going to grow in its importance. Two factors: because of technological advancements. You already mentioned the Zuckerberg factor, right? Mm-hmm. These tools we're receiving now are falling into our lap, and churches need to be proactively thinking about how they can leverage them for the kingdom's sake. So there's the technological advancements, which are not going to stop. And so the church needs to get on board and get ahead of the curve, not behind it. And then the other thing is we are living in a more and more post-Christian culture here in the States, and also in Canada, especially in Canada as well, being a Canadian. So how do we proactively be missional and take church to people instead of just assuming we're going to put our multi-site up there and we're going to put a sign and people are going to come to it? How do we go to environments they're already in instead of expecting them to come to environments that we're at? Mm-hmm. The benefits for doubling down in this area for churches down the road would be plenty. I already mentioned the missional mindset. I like to say it meets culture where they're at, right? People like to binge content online. You have Netflix and chill. Well, now it's church and chill. So like, how do you leverage that from a cultural standpoint and allow people to experience church in a way in which they naturally experience and consume additional content in their daily lives. Mm-hmm. For the multi-site model in particular, online is nice because it levels the playing field. What it does is it makes sure that you can equally represent all of your churches online. Mm-hmm. So it's easy to do that. Every campus has a page on the website. Every campus has a Facebook page. Every campus could have a social media account. Those are easy, scalable tools that you can give to all of your multi-sites. Because the cost there in the digital environment is much lower than it is in the physical environments, it helps level that out. So that's another way to do it. Mm-hmm. In terms of the other benefit for multi-site is it builds unity and community across your site. So obviously, as the church gets bigger and bigger, you're going to move naturally towards disunity and a lack of connection. The online aspect gives you a chance to come together and get unified. So I think that's the other explicit value of pushing towards this for the multi-site people. If you're not doing this, then you're going to continue to drift farther and farther as an organization. And then the things I would say for campuses, I've heard this before, that there's sometimes a false notion out there that we got the three campuses going well, which we're super proud of, and we're super excited that God's doing here. Great. We're kind of nervous and afraid to launch an online campus because it might poach some of these guests and move them over to that experience. And our numbers are good. We don't want to move people over for fear of losing them. And I would say that is a little bit of fear-based thinking. And from what I've personally seen and seen from the examples of other churches that invest a little bit towards an online campus, an online church, an online experience, that the rising tide raises all ships. For us at Liquid, it does a couple things. So first of all, it's that spiritual community in a digital environment for the people who meet there. That's the kind of the main focus and the main priority of an online campus. The second thing, and I'm going to make sure I state that it's a second thing, is it can be a farm team, a farm system to move people from the digital to the physical environments. So we have, out of our guests, when we poll them every year, about 95% of our people experience a physical campus for the first time. About 5% of our people experience liquid church for the first time in an online setting. So we know that we get a one out of 20 guests sitting in the room, the first time they came to us was through church online. And the reason is because people want to try before they buy. They're nervous about what church is going to be like. They want to see it before they come to your actual physical location. So it gives your guests a chance to try before they buy. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is, it works both ways, right? It's a farm system towards your physical campuses, and it's a farm system back to your digital environment. So for us, we have a lot of people who are online who said, yeah, I used to go to Liquid. My work moved me. I'm out of state. I love what God is doing there, and I'm still a part of you guys with your online campus. Mm-hmm. We have people who are vacationing, sick, working, who said, I normally go to this physical campus, but I can't this Sunday, so I go to church online every fourth Sunday when I have to work the morning shift on Sunday. So think of it as a farm system both ways. And I think you'll see a huge value in your multi-site model.
Yeah, that's great. That's great stuff. Love that. Now, how have you been thinking about the whole, like, is this a, you know, the bridge particularly from, say, Facebook Live to the campuses? Well, how are you using it flowing that way? Are you doing specific call outs? How are you, like, saying, hey, we've got campuses in this location? What does that look like for people, just to flesh that a little bit more?
Yeah. So for me, I always have to make sure that first and foremost, it's a spiritual environment, a digital context. So because if not, and then it feels like it's just a shell game, right? Like,
yep.
Thanks for being here. The real spiritual home is over here. Yep. Go to our campus and experience. So yep. We keep the priority. But then, like you said, we make sure that we make that option available as a secondary thing in our communication. Hey, we have our locations. Click on this tab, liquidchurch.com/locations. You can find out all the information if you're ever in the area and you want to experience. So we make sure this is it's secondary and it's serving the main purpose, not the other way around.
Yeah, that's great. Good stuff. Natalie, we already heard you confess earlier about your website. Come on, people. but how are you thinking about this? How do you think about it specifically? I know you're doing some innovative stuff online with even how you're distributing kids, your curriculum, that kind of thing, but give us a sense of what you're thinking about.
Yeah. So, I mean, so much of what Ben said, it was fantastic and spot on. I think there is the obvious ability to engage online that, like a little can go a very long way. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we were very early on engagers with the podcast community, which a lot of that was thanks to one Rich Birch. Man, you're getting a lot of shout outs today. It's ridiculous. So we still have a lot of people that are engaging on podcasts. I was just checking some of our, we track weekly, just kind of the number of downloads and things like that. So just this last week, we had 14,000 downloads of the podcast in 1 week.
That's amazing. And what does that compare to Sunday morning attendance? Just to,
Sunday morning attendance. Well, unfortunately, this past week, due to weather, we had next to nobody. But we actually closed all of our sites with the exception of one, which is crazy. That's never happened. But typically we have roughly 5,500 people in attendance. So
kind of three times the number of people downloading podcasts. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And so aside from the audio, that's the audio cast downloads, we also have people, you know, that are watching on YouTube. We average in a given week around 100,000 minutes of watch time. It's pretty great too. So we're definitely seeing some good traction online. Mm-hmm. And so I won't reiterate much of what Ben said, because he said so many great things that I would just say yes and amen to. But one of the pieces that I think often gets neglected and something that I've felt very passionately about has been providing a kids and youth online option, something for kids and youth when they are homesick or they are away at a hockey tournament or they are, you fill in the blank. Oftentimes when adults in your community are missing church, their kids are missing it as well. And so having something for the kids and youth to engage with online, I think, is also very important. So our kids and youth curriculum is completely available online. So we have it in a couple of different locations too, to make it easier to access. So for people who are wanting to access it online from, say, somewhere that they're completely unable to be a part of a meeting house location, they can access all of our materials online, including, you know, activity pages and all the stuff for their kids, coloring sheets, things like that. It's all available at curriculum.church, so they can get all of that online. For people who are maybe part of our community and are tracking regularly and, oh, their kids missed a Sunday, they just want to grab the teaching and sit and watch it with them, they can just find it on our YouTube channel. So our YouTube channel is, we had a kind of a YouTuber kind of help us strategize a little bit in how we present on our YouTube channel things. So having just specific identified playlists. So we have a kids and youth playlist. We have a current teaching series playlist, and those kinds of things have really helped with our online engagement, help people find what they're looking for more readily. But I really do, I obviously am passionate about kids and youth equally being able to experience that online option as well. And I look forward to more possibilities in the church sphere for that kind of thing.
Yeah. And I would encourage people to, sorry to interrupt, but I would encourage people to drop by, particularly on the kids and youth side, which I know we've talked about before, but particularly on the YouTube side, it is amazing. You just provide it there, and it's amazing the quality that you guys, you know, provide. It's an incredible resource that churches could take advantage of. And I think it's great that you, I think you've hit on an interesting idea. I think a lot of times we think about exporting the core adult teaching, but we're not doing things as churches to help parents, you know, export that, that piece of the puzzle for them online, which I think is wonderful. That's great.
Well, and just kind of on top of that too, you know, parents, the level of parental engagement can only increase with this kind of thing too, because not only can you ask your kids, hey, what did you guys do this Sunday morning at church? You can actually go online, find what your kids, the teaching your kids received, watch it either with them or without them, and then be able to engage in a further conversation, dive a little deeper in what that looks like. We have, I curate our parent blog. It's parents.themeetinghouse.com. And the idea is simply to help parents engage. So it's got some questions to engage with your kids on. It's got a kind of halfway through the week, whether you go to a home church or you aren't connected with the home church, here's a way for your kids to engage in, with kind of home church like questions. That's all online for our people to access. So, I think there's a high value in that. And when we talk about kids and youth and the incredible ability for parents to be their number one spiritual investors, this is just one of the resources that we provide that allows that to happen.
That's great. So good. Greg, how are you guys thinking about the online stuff? I know a lot of great things have been said already. Is there anything that you'd add to nuance that conversation?
Well, I am always surprised when we ask the question, which we do every week in our next steps. We ask, how'd you find Eastside and what made you come back? And after a personal invitation, Google and Yelp are way up there. And it was kind of wild just to see how many people come to our church because of Yelp.
Right.
People using, you know, that app. And like Ben said, you know, with our live stream services, people do try before they buy. So they'll Google us, find us on Yelp, then they'll maybe live stream a service and experience of that. And then something we do, which I think is cool, is we're very active on social media, and it drives them to all of our campuses. But our social media will always preview what's coming or help you catch what you miss. So Danica Finnegan is actually my niece. She's full-time on staff. She does a lot of the designing of our images and all of our branding for each message series or for each event. And then what happens is that gets sent to all the staff every Friday. And we're asked to download these images and put it out on our social media. So it goes out in the churches.
That's a great move.
Yeah. And then Gene Apple, our lead guy, he is very active on social media with this, but he talks to us at staff meeting and asks us, you know, it's an expectation that we throw and personalize that stuff on our own social media. And I do it. And then I watch how many people share it. And it really does go viral and have big results. So I look forward to getting that email from communications every week. And then, you know, we have a typical website landing page that allows people to choose which campus they want to find the information on. We don't have an app yet, but that's coming hopefully in the fall. obviously our same sermon is archived for all campuses because it's all, you know, Gene from the Anaheim campus. Now our offline church or for, you know, physical campuses, they just use that when, you know, that option when they're sick or out of town, and they indicate that they're a regular attender that has been on a physical campus before on the card once the online service is over. Then the online card that comes up after they have watched the service or listened to the sermon, it matches our connection card at all campuses for people who have never attended a physical campus, and they indicate whether they have never attended a physical campus before. And but it only asks for three pieces of contact: their name, their email, and their zip code. Okay. And what we do with that then is the zip code check allows us to plop them in the follow-up process queues for the appropriate campus and staff at that campus to help guide them into a potential visit to a physical campus. So here are three quick examples of how that's actually worked in real time. I get all the online cards. They'll come up on my phone in real time. And so I was driving away from our Saturday evening service, and one gal had watched the service, and she indicated that she was interested in next steps and what you can only do unless you come to a physical campus. So I just clicked and emailed her back. There's automatic emails that'll come up, but I just decided on my drive home that I would just click and email her back and say, hey, why don't you come join us at the Anaheim campus? I saw where she lived. She emailed back. She goes, I'm not sure if this is a form email, but that could be an option. Can you tell me more about this, that, and the other thing? And I did. And she was so intrigued. The next morning, there she was. There she was at next steps. And then one time we had somebody who said, I would like to be baptized. And we checked their zip code, and they lived near Park Rapids, Minnesota. So we plopped them in our campus pastor's queue over there. He contacted them and baptized them. You know, that's from the online campus. And then we had one person indicate on their card that they made a decision to follow Jesus. And when I followed up on them, I noticed the zip code was near Bellflower, and we were getting ready to launch a Bellflower campus.
Oh, very cool.
So I had, instead of me follow up, I had our campus pastor for that, who was going to launch the campus. And that person ended up getting set up to be have a key role in our care and recovery ministry at the Bellflower campus. So it's just, you know, it's really cool to use the whole online thing, whether social media or how you use your website or how you use your your live stream of your service and everything else to kind of energize what's happening at every campus.
Very cool. There's some great stuff packed in there for sure. Some great opportunities, you know, for you to leverage online for your church. Well, this brings us to the end of our episode, folks. Thank you so much for tuning in. This is my favorite hour of the month, and don't tell the other podcast that. I really love this opportunity, a chance to kind of dive deep into these issues. Again, if you've got questions, we would love for you to send them our way. Just record them on your phone and email them to me, rich@unseminary.com, and that really does actually come to me, and we'll listen to them. We listen to everyone, and but we'll get a chance to put a couple on every month. So thank you so much, friends, for tuning in, for being a part of the show, and we'll see you next month on Unseminary's All About Multisite.